When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Keep cool out there, folks. It's gonna be a hot one.
We the people love summer baseball. The food is over the top. The cheers come from the chest. We came with friends, but we met new ones. We have seats, but we're standing. They say it's anyone's game. But from what we can see, it's everyone's. Baseball for the people.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
The leadership is really to blame for the condition of the country in Iran. The president of the United States has made very clear that the United States has a lot of leverage here. We have economic leverage. We've got military leverage. What he's trying to do is make sure the American people are safe and strike a deal that's good for the American people. I encourage the Iranians to come to the table seriously. We've seen some signs that they're going to do that. We've seen some signs of bravado. Fundamentally, we're in a good spot. They're reopening the straits. We have a ceasefire. And frankly, if they break their end of the bargain, then they're going to see some serious consequences.
Well, what more is there to say about Iran? We're just kind of in a standoff right now. And that is the way that I would refer to it, not necessarily a ceasefire, more of a standoff. Because we have threatened, Trump has threatened all the way that it would be bad. He said that the civilization would end. I'm not sure how much further you could go than that. And Iran has responded accordingly by saying, hey, let's buy a little time, which is maybe all they're doing. Iran is very difficult. Islamic fundamentalists are very, very difficult. Because the only way that Iran, J.D. Vance just outlined it right there. There's no way they can really win this war, especially short term. The only way Iran can win this is by just long-term wearing you out. And even then, it's not really that they're winning, they're just not losing. And that may be what they're doing, which is why you go, well, you're in a ceasefire, you're in a standoff, as I put it. But what does that mean? Does that mean that anything's going to actually change? Do you have leadership there that's actually willing to work on the behalf of the people of the country? Or are they working on behalf of basically themselves and their own eternity, because that's what you're dealing with. With Iran, the way that they can beat you is by just wearing you down long term, not being afraid to die, which they're not, or maybe deep down they're afraid to die, but they're okay with it because they're promised heaven in Islam if they are martyred. And a lot of times they're actually looking for that. That's why you have a suicide bomber, is because not because they necessarily are excited about killing themselves, but they're guaranteed in Islam heaven if you martyr yourself. And so that's why they're willing to do it, and that's why Iran is willing to play this long game. I just think Trump's smarter than that. If I've figured it out and you're listening and you've figured that out, I guarantee that they know that. So what's the long-term play? I don't know. They've tried to squeeze the Strait of Hormuz. It's kind of worked. It's made us at least uncomfortable because other than the gas prices being high, I mean, this wouldn't even hardly be a news story. The blustering would be, but the fact that we're actually feeling it in one way is really the only reason Americans are interested in paying attention to this at all. Here's more from J.D. Vance about the Strait of Hormuz and gas prices.
We've already seen an increase in traffic today. Hopefully we'll see an increase in traffic tomorrow. We actually think that we are seeing signs that the Straits are starting to reopen. I think you guys have probably seen oil prices have come down. So I think the oil markets, the gas markets are seeing the same thing. But the president's been very, very clear. The deal is a ceasefire, a negotiation. That's what we give. And what they give is the Straits are going to be reopened. If we don't see that happening, the president is not going to abide by our terms if the Iranians are not abiding by their terms.
You know, he is right. Gas prices or oil prices have come down from their peak, but they haven't quite dipped to where you're comfortable again. You know, the last I checked, they were still in the mid-90s. And going into the weekend, that's about where they were hovering for most of the last two or three days, which is lower than it was. But and you know, it does sound like there are some ships going through, but you really kind of, the market waits to see action, not just talk. Although talk does move it, the talk is based on action, which really moves it. And we're not quite there yet. I mean, the gas price, the oil price, the lowest it had gotten just a month and a half, 2 months ago, was about $67 per barrel. Well, we're certainly above that. And how fast will it come back down? Well, I kept predicting that they would secure this strait pretty quickly and or Iran would relent and it would come back down quickly. This has been longer than I thought already. I mean, we're close to 6 weeks. But we're maybe there. You know, I'm not really sure what Iran's going to be able to do unless they decide to play the long game and just become martyrs. And then they will have almost no leadership. We will just continue to take them out. And I'm not sure how that plays out. We wouldn't have to really put boots on the ground, as they say. We would just have to be willing to keep taking out their leadership until somebody steps up who's willing to talk to us. And maybe that's the strategy. Maybe the strategy of Trump is just long-term. I mean, first, he's got to get gas prices down. He knows that. And then second, maybe it is just attrition. That anytime a leader steps up and is like, we're not going to deal, or they won't deal, they say they will and they won't, which is the fear with this ceasefire, they just knock them out again and deal with the next guy until somebody comes along who's willing to actually talk to us. They have no leverage other than just Americans' willingness to deal with it. That's it. So if we've got the cojones, you could say, to continue to press this, they really don't have a leg to stand on, and you're going to see worldwide terror really drop. You're going to see the numbers of terrorists and the money going to funnel these things, not just in America, but everywhere, really start to drop. We'll take a short break and be right back. We got a lot going on this show. We're going to talk a little bit about sex trafficking and human trafficking next here on Wiggins America.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintained in the letter X.com/AI.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
I'm bringing up a story here that's actually pretty sad, not because it's sad, but because it's related to so many other news items that we talk about here on the show. It's this, from USA Today. It's about a sex trafficking survivor named Gina Cavallo. I guess she has made herself public about this. She runs an organization for other people who have been trafficked. And she writes this article. She says, "The people who exploited me used both physical violence and psychological control. I was moved repeatedly, isolated from anyone who might recognize what was happening, and given a different identity. And then I was coerced, drugged, and sold. Like many trafficking victims," and she doesn't say how this happened to her, so I'm curious, but she just kind of starts right in the middle there. She says, "Like many trafficking victims, I was subjected not only to direct physical violence, but to a sustained effort to break down my sense of autonomy and convince me that escape was impossible. Over time, the abuse reshaped how I saw myself and the world around me. My traffickers understood that control depends not only on force, but also on fear, isolation, and shame. They made it clear that if I tried to seek help, I would not be believed. They made me believe I was not worth saving." And if you ever saw... did you ever see the Dr. Phil episode where he had a trafficking victim on? This woman, and I say this because it was while he still had a mainline TV show, and it was so shocking to see, because you thought with a lot of those kinds of shows, I'm not putting him in the same category as Jerry Springer, but that stuff's clearly all just made up. And then you have Oprah, and you have some of these others that you're like, I think the guests they have are at least somewhat vetted. And with Dr. Phil, I would think, well, he's certainly not just making it up for attention. So this victim that he had on seemed like she had not been out of captivity for long. In fact, I think her story was that she saw Dr. Phil, like she was just at wherever she was watching TV. And Dr. Phil mentioned something about a safe haven for sex trafficking or slash trafficking victims in general. And she just called the line and said, "Hey, I was just wondering about this." And they tracked her down because she was kind of nervous about coming out about it. And she was still in captivity. And I don't know how she got out, but she made her way out to somebody that Dr. Phil suggested. And then they got her on the show. I mean, it was a pretty amazing story. But the one thing that stuck with me is how much she still identified with her captors. Even while she was on the show, she would kind of half defend them. And you knew, well, this is all psychological manipulation. And then the story was that at one point, whoever was holding her hostage, and it was probably a network of people, said, "Hey, do you want out of this?" And then gave her a gun and said, "You can kill yourself if you want to." And she was like, "Yes." And she took the gun and tried to kill herself immediately with it. Like, "Just get me out of this. It's so horrible." And it didn't have any bullets. And they were like, "Oh, we're just testing you to see if you'd actually do it." And it was like part of the conditioning, right? So anyway, back to this lady, Gina Cavallo. She says, when I eventually escaped, I believed the most difficult part of my life was behind me, but instead I encountered another set of challenges that many trafficking survivors face in the United States. I'm sure this is similar all over the place, but she's here. She says, during the time I was being trafficked, I received multiple criminal charges that followed me for decades. I was forced into commercial sex acts while she was being trafficked that later resulted in prostitution charges. She also incurred minor charges related to the drugs that she was given by the traffickers, so the addictum, and they were charged for running from police while trying to escape dangerous situations. She says, this is not unique to me. Many trafficking victims are arrested and charged for offenses that are a direct result of their exploitation. This is how traffickers keep control. We're told that police will see us as criminals, not victims, and they're right. Police see these crimes and they go after the crime. They don't know the backstory. I mean, how's a police officer going to know? And then this affects these records don't disappear once the trafficking ends. They follow survivors, and it's hard to rebuild their lives because now they're considered criminals and they have a record, and so it's hard to get employment. And so she's just sort of outing all this, and I think rightfully so. Like, some of this stuff is for sure a problem. It's not an easily fixed problem, because if you are committing crimes, you know, it's going to be tough to start writing laws that apply to sex trafficking victims to say, oh, all those crimes you committed, those get wiped away. Because, you know, the problem is not those people. Those people, I'd love to see that happen for them. But that law would be exploited to no end by other criminals who'd say, well, it wasn't really my fault. My boyfriend was doing something and he made me do it. Like, it's a slippery slope to try to write laws that would exonerate these people. However, it is a problem. And it's the problem they keep running into with the Epstein files and the Epstein victims. One of the criticisms that everybody is leveling against these people is, well, why are they only getting basically like Prince Andrew, and then you know a bunch of stuff randomly about Bill Clinton, but there's no, if there were all these underage victims, why aren't they coming out? And it's weird because they do come out, but they don't say specifically what happened to them. And so a lot of it is that they're caught in this themselves, that they apparently, once they became 18, the Epstein circle would then use them to traffic other underage boys and girls. And so they're a part of the crime then. And that's what's so tough about this, is that if you really wanted to go after the Epstein stuff, you'd have to have somebody who's squeaky clean as a prosecutor who's saying, I know what was done to you individually, like each girl or boy for that matter, although it's mostly women that speak out about this. I know what was done to you. We're going to wipe away your individual crimes if you can speak out against the larger crime of sex trafficking and tell your story. I'm not really sure why that hasn't been done yet, other than I guess that it would take a lot of resources. But good God, you know how much money we're spending on the FBI and the DOJ and the CIA? They have plenty of resources. So what are they spending them on? And I know I'm kind of spinning into a bigger issue here, but what Kash Patel has said, and Tulsi Gabbard has said as well, I'm not sure what Pam Bondi had said about this, and she's gone anyway, but they said that the organizations themselves are pretty corrupt. Like, they're full of people. They have tons and tons of people who are there just to either A, collect a paycheck and not really do anything, or B, they're there to actually sabotage the Trump administration because they're Democrats and they want to see nothing happen and they want it to return to status quo. And Trump is in there cleaning house and changing things. The problem is, and this was kind of the Kash Patel, Dan Bongino has been saying this stuff too, that it's really hard to tell who's who. Because if an assignment was given to you and you executed it, but you did it kind of slow, was that you dragging your feet to ruin the case, or were you just not great at it, and or was it just hard? You know, it's really, really tough to tell who's who because they're protecting themselves the whole time too. So it's just a really tough world that they're living in. You know, they still have a little over 2.5 years to be rooting this out, and I think they constantly are. But it's just sad that these organizations, these law enforcement mega monoliths that should have everybody working at full steam to solve every single one of these cases, whether they're big or small, they just don't because they're full of people who are protectionists and pretty nasty. Like they're self-absorbed people who are not there to serve, ultimately, is what's the problem. We're going to take a short break here. This is Wiggins America. Thank you for being here this weekend. We'll be right back.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter X.com/AI.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to ro.co/listen to see if you qualify. RX only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
So glad to have Trisha Everding back in the studio. It's been too long.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey.
Like you just discovered you were here.
Oh, my gosh. Where are we?
Look at this. You just woke up and it's 2026.
Wow.
Have you been on the show this year?
I don't know.
I don't know if you have. Maybe early in January. Mm-hmm. But it's been a while.
What are we talking about?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Cleveland?
I think it's in Cleveland.
I've been to Cleveland.
You've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I have not.
Do you have any desire?
I don't know. Is it cool? Have you been?
I've never been. I would say this is one of those things that if I found myself in Cleveland for a weekend, maybe, but yeah. I have no real desire to seek it out.
I feel that way about most museums. If I'm around them and I happen to go in them, I usually think, oh, this is neat, but I'm not a museum seeker outer.
Yeah. Museum, just the word itself. sounds boring.
Yeah, like the kid in you just can't get all jazzed about going excited. To a museum to read plaques on a wall about guitars. I don't know. Maybe it's super cool. It's probably super cool.
Well, if you are a big fan of a certain artist, I'm sure there is a booth or whatever they are that is devoted to that artist that's probably like, oh, this is cool.
Is there anything you're so passionate about that like really gets you excited? Like for some people, it's music. For some people, it's...
Like hobby-wise?
Yeah.
Well, writing, but that's not... There's nothing I can tangibly say, oh, I want to go seek this out with that hobby.
Like you can quote-unquote nerd... There's nothing about it that you can like nerd out on, like where you'd like plan trips around or like make people sit down and listen to you talk about for hours.
Okay, so this is pretty nerdy, but my first book, The Life of Human, mm-hmm. I just wrote it from home. And it takes place mostly in the South. And so anytime you're writing a book that's not about where you are, you got to do research about it. And I did a lot about, because it's very strategic, because there's like this robot rebellion in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts in basically Miami and starts to make its way into the United States. Well, I had to look at the geography of the South to see where there would be natural barriers for the army to like set up to try to stop it and stuff. And then most of the book, a lot of it takes place in a little town near there. Well, on a trip one time, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to be not that far from that town, which I had never been to.
Oh, you for sure have to stop and
so
see that.
Yeah, that was fun. But it really burst my bubble because I had it in my head what it would look like and what, even you could use Google Maps and, you know, kind of seek it out and see what it is, which I did. But being there, I was like, this isn't really that.
It didn't have the same shine that it did in your mind.
Because it's like a building in particular, and there's stuff that goes on around it and the parking lots and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this doesn't look anything like what's in my head. And it's really unimpressive.
I think you answered my question, though. I think you have writing that you're so passionate about.
Yeah.
That I don't think I have that.
Do you have any music or media, movies, anything that you're just like, oh yeah, that's my jam?
No, I mean, I like watching movies. I like watching TV. I like reading books. I have hobbies, mostly reading, but I don't feel like I need to like if they had a book museum, which I think they call a library, I guess I'd like to go to a library.
A book museum.
I there's nothing, like, people get so passionate about things, and there's something in me that just doesn't do that.
I know. And you know what's funny? On this station, there are people here that I can think of for that. One of them is Mark Reardon. That dude loves concerts.
Music in general.
Music in general.
Just
new music.
New music, live music, all different types of music.
Yeah.
He just passionate about it.
He loves it. I mean, he soaks it up, and it's cool.
Yep.
And then he'll seek out concerts. He'll travel to see certain bands and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've always actually kind of admired that about him, because it's something that I did most people did when they're younger. And he's just kept doing it.
No, he loves it.
And loves it.
He's passionate about it.
But the funny thing is, when I think about Mark Cox, I'm like, that dude's passion is politics.
Mm-hmm.
So his job is his hobby.
Yep.
Which is why he just loves getting up at 4 in the morning every day, being like, let's do it again.
Let's talk about it. His passion is also bourbon, so he balances it out.
That's true.
But he's a guy with a lot of passions and things that he gets really excited about.
Yeah, I will say this. I'm writing a new novel that has become a trilogy, and it is written very, it's extremely eerie. I love doing it, though. I mean, if I have a minute,
I'm sitting
down with that thing and just working on it, pushing it further. And it's intended to be, it's the first thing I've ever written that's intended to have almost no comedy in it. And I'm just pushing myself just to see if I can do it. And I think it's going.
You slip jokes in there and then you're like, delete, delete, delete.
I really want to at times that I'm like, ugh, I can't.
None of your characters are funny?
None of the characters in that book are funny. They're not. They're very serious. I mean, there's some like lighthearted things, but for the most part, it's like a very scary, suspenseful book. And it's intended to keep you feeling uneasy the whole time you're reading it. So a little comedy, especially since it's written in such an old style, it's almost like reading Frankenstein, like in the way that it's written, that it just doesn't lend itself to a modern way of joking. So my point in telling you that is I'm so passionate about it. Well, over spring break last week, my wife I told her I would really like your feedback on this because she's a really good editor. And she sat down with it and she freaking hated it. She tore it apart. And part of me is glad because that's what she's good at is, you know, oh, you gotta basically bomb this part completely out.
Was this a call my baby ugly situation where you...
Yes. Like, but she can get away with it a little bit, well, but it still hurts, you know?
Yeah, where you've got real hurt feelings.
Oh, man. Because I'm done with book one. I'm done with book two. Mm-hmm. I'm more than halfway done with book three.
You're committed.
I'm way in.
You're way
in. And she's like, you know what you need to change is the beginning. Everything. And I'm like, oh, no.
Everything.
This is bad news. But she's right. And yeah. It's written in such an old style that it's slow. And she's like, yes, I understand that it's very true to itself, but you got to move it faster and get the hook in. And I'm like, you're right. You're not wrong. So I got to restructure the whole beginning to get it into a hook.
Sorry.
But anyway.
You're lucky to have her.
I am lucky to have her. Let me ask you this quick question, which we started the segment with.
I was wondering if we were going to get back
and
to
we'll
that.
Wrap it
up. Derailed it. I apologize.
Do you care ever about who is nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No. Do you?
Yeah. I hate that I care. I don't want to care.
Wow.
But I do care.
You care.
It makes me mad, first of all, when they nominate people who are not rock and roll to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because you're just saying music. You're just saying the Music Hall of Fame. Well, go have a Music Hall of Fame.
But not rock
and roll.
Okay.
And I'm even okay with that definition being elastic.
How far off of the rock and roll genre do they go? Who's nominated?
Okay.
Do you have a list?
Let me just read a couple of these artists that definitely for me would not be rock and roll. And then I'll say a few that I'm like, maybe, you know, I could see. But Lauryn Hill?
Yeah, not rock and roll.
Not rock and roll. Wu-Tang Clan?
Not rock and roll.
Sade?
Don't know who
she's
that
like
is.
Easy listening, not even close to rock and roll.
I don't even
roll.
Know if I really know who that is.
What about Pink?
Oh, love her. Yeah, I think you could make an argument that Pink's rock. It's pop rock. But
I would
I think
argue against
could,
it, but also allow that the argument could be made.
I think if you're talking about the elasticity thing, I think she kind of falls within, she'd hit a bumper, but I could see Pink in there.
That's fair. Shakira. No.
Latin rock?
You're trying really hard, though, right?
Yeah.
So that drives me crazy.
Is it just that there's not enough rock and rollers to keep this thing going?
Well, I don't know. Listen to the other ones. Black Crowes.
Yeah.
Melissa Etheridge. I mean, she's not like hard rock, but she would be considered rock.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Idol.
Yeah. Bob, that's kind of a pop rock sort of thing, too.
He's a lame rocker, but he's rock. He's tried to be really hard. NXS is a little more pop rock, but I think rock.
Is NXS...
Yeah, go ahead. Take your time.
I don't think I can. They're punk rock.
No. They're...
Am I thinking of someone else?
I think you're thinking of somebody else. They're more pop 80s rock.
Okay.
I still think that they would be considered rock, even if they were using a lot of synth. Iron Maiden? I mean, that's
rock.
That's definitely rock, right?
I don't even know what they do, but yeah. I know that that's rock.
And then Oasis. You know, that's traditional Beatles-style rock. It's not as hard as nowadays.
To me, Oasis kind of feels like the other end of the spectrum from Pink, where it's like an alt-rock sort of thing.
That's fair. I wouldn't call Pink that. Pink is more
other
poppy.
Other end of the spectrum. Okay. She's like the pop rock, and Oasis is the alt-rock.
Okay.
And there's like, in the middle is like real rock and roll.
Yeah, okay. Okay. But anyway, there are plenty of artists that are considered rock.
So
that you don't have to add Mariah Carey, who is also on this list.
She's an icon.
Oh, totally. But go be in the Pop Hall of Fame or the Music Hall of Fame. You're not a rock and roll artist. This is the same argument that happens with the stupid Rock and Roll Hall of Fame all the time.
Every year.
Every year. And it never ceases to drive me crazy. It's just like...
Remember, how do they fix it? How do they fix it? You want them to make a bunch of different Hall of Fames?
Oh, no. The cat's out of the bag. Now you can't fix it. You got to basically destroy it.
You want to just blow the whole thing up
and just start over? Shut it down.
Shut it down.
Start
nobody,
over.
All of it meant nothing.
Yeah. Once you allowed Lauryn Hill in.
What if they just renamed the existing Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to Music Hall of Fame?
fine. It's boring, but it's more accurate. And I'm fine with that. What this reminds me of is back when cable TV was at its peak. It's dead now. Yeah. But when cable TV was at its peak.
Is this like early 2000s?
Yeah, it would be right around there. When you had a billion channels and they were all making content, but they were making it would be like the new channel was the goat channel. You'd be like, oh, we're focusing on goats and not greatest of all time, like actual goats. And that's what we're going to do. And they would spin this weird marketing campaign to be like, everybody who's really into quilting, this is your channel.
I mean, that hyper focused thing works because people are so passionate about, there are people that are so passionate about certain things that's why, I mean, it happens on YouTube all the time. If you can hone in on the quilting channel and get those passionate quilters, yep, it works.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it if they do quilting on the quilting channel. But what ends up happening is that they're like, you know what people really like is puppies. And they're like, at first, we're going to introduce a show called Quilting with Puppies. And then it just becomes puppies, and you're not doing your original vision at all. Like, you use that as a marketing thing, mm-hmm, and then you just jump ship. MTV is the perfect example, mm-hmm, of that. They were music television, and then they started to branch into other forms of music television. Okay, totally fine.
And all reality.
And then it just became Jersey Shore, and you're like, this is ridiculous.
I said, thank you so much for Jersey Shore.
What? You loved it?
You don't love Jersey Shore? No. I've only watched like a season or two.
And look, I've met Snooki.
What? Is she great?
Well, I'd say met is a pretty loose term. When the Annie Fry show, you never heard this story?
Mm-mm.
We're going to go long just because of stupid Snooki.
Your show.
When the Annie Fry show, as a team, Annie, Brad, myself, and Hannah at the time, all went to Disney World for a weekend.
Yeah.
We were staying at the same resort as Snooki.
Did I know that?
I don't know.
That's hilarious.
And I didn't know that. And we got onto an elevator, apparently, with her husband, who is also somewhat famous, mm-hmm, not as much as her. And I told some joke about keeping a banana with me at all times and keeping it in my pocket or something. You know where that's going. And that dude laughed. And we got off the elevator, and Hannah goes, do you know who that was? I'm like, no, it's some dude with a stroller.
And a great sense of humor.
And a good sense of humor. And she said, no, that was Snooki's husband. I'm like, oh, really? Made Snooki's husband laugh. And then we saw her. We saw her on a boat.
Talk about the peak of.
Yeah.
Like, this is your. You
well,
and,
what
your
I'm
prime.
Telling you is that I can speak more authoritatively about Jersey Shore
than I can, but I do think it is pretty funny.
Pretty nice girl someday.
Wiggins America.
Someday I'm going to make her mine. Her Majesty is a pretty nice girl, but she never does a thing for me.
It's really hard to not like Harry Enten. He and Scott Jennings are the best part of CNN. By far, by far. And of course, that's because I like what they say. Although Harry Enten, not always. And that's also why I like him. He tends to give you the good and the bad. And he doesn't really phrase it that way. He's just giving you, here, this is good for Republicans. Here, this is good for Democrats. And bad for Democrats, bad for Republicans. He doesn't really care. He's just super enthusiastic. If you've ever seen this guy, he's the chief pollster for CNN. And he's on air with them all the time, usually standing next to a screen, usually standing next to the other host of whatever program he's on at the given moment, because he kind of hops around between the shows. And he will give you devastating news for Democrats one day. And then the next day, it's the worst polling Trump's ever seen. You know, he said, and he's just excited to deliver you the news. He almost seems to have no stake in it. He's just happy to be there. And he's really fun to listen to in that sense. And it's also, of course, because it's CNN. When he delivers news about a poll, he's always standing next to this host who sometimes, if it's really good for Republicans or Trump or something, they're like, well, like they don't want to hear it, but he's there to do his job and he's just there to tell you. So I got a couple of those for you that I'm going to play here. I would say this one's really good news. I don't necessarily think it's going to mean a whole lot for the House. I still think in the midterms in November, the House will go Democrat. Because there's only like three or four seats that the Republicans hold over Democrats. So it's not going to take much. And in a backlash year, which a midterm always is against the president, especially when the president has both chambers of Congress, it's almost always going to swing against him. It's just a matter of how much is it going to swing against him. And they only need four or five seats. So I'm not changing a prediction based on that, but I still think this is a surprising poll. And by the way, before I deliver it to you here, this is an aggregate of polls. So it's not like he's cherry picking one. This is, I think it's called either the CNN aggregate or it's the Harry Enten aggregate of polls, putting all of them together and give you an average. Here you go.
Average of all the polls, Dem generic congressional ballot lead at this point in the cycle with the Republican president. On average, their lead's actually slightly less. It's 5 points. That's less than it was back in 2018 when it was 8 points, and way less than it was during the 2006 cycle when it was 11 points. So, yeah, Democrats are ahead, but they're only ahead by five with a president whose net approval rating is bordering on minus 20 to minus 30, depending on what polls you look at. You'd make the argument Democrats should be way ahead, and they're just only sort of slightly ahead.
So you go from what, 11 or 12 in 2006 when Democrats had a huge year, and this is in polling, and then you go to 2018, the last time that Trump had a midterm in which Democrats took like 30-something or 40 seats, and they were up in the polling going into it by eight. Well, Democrats are still up right now, but they're only up by five, which I think more than anything, yes, this is all about the midterms, but ultimately what surprised me about that is that you think that people hate Trump so bad because that's the coverage. And you feel like maybe you're a little bit alone. You tune into 97.1 because it makes you feel a little bit less alone. And you hopefully are getting a bigger, broader picture, maybe even the true story most of the time over the narrative. We're opinion hosts, so obviously we have an opinion and we have a narrative too. But you know that. I mean, we're very, very open about it. And hopefully you're getting kind of the other side. But if you're just paying attention to kind of the, you know, stick your finger in the wind and see how the wind's blowing, it would feel like Trump is more unpopular than he's ever been. That, and this is broader than Trump too, that the GOP in general is just hated and is incredibly unpopular, and they're going to lose badly in November. But this flies in the face of all of that. So I found that interesting. And then, I don't know if this was the same broadcast or a different one. I should probably check and see if they're wearing the same clothes. But Harry Enten also went in, based on that polling, I think, to what does that mean, not for the House, but for the Senate.
Take a look. GOP would win the Senate with this map. Let's say Republicans only hold onto the states that Trump won by greater than 10 points. That would, in fact, give them the Senate 51 to 49. Why? Because what you would see is you would see that the Democrats would flip North Carolina. They would flip Maine. But Republicans would hold on to Ohio. They'd hold on to Texas. And they'd hold on to Alaska because Donald Trump won all of those states by greater than 10 points. And I will note, John and I were talking, you have the NCAA tournament going on. This is sort of the chalk scenario going on where the most obvious events actually do occur. Because take a look, during the Trump era, look at this, flip the Senate seat, midterm and presidential years. States the other party won by 10 plus points in the last presidential election. 0 times did a party flip those states. So we're talking about places like Texas, Alaska, Ohio, where Trump won by double digits.
It is going to be incredibly difficult for Democrats to take back the Senate. And part of me is very happy about that because, of course, I want to see the Trump agenda passed, the America First agenda, I should say, passed, which is mostly Trump. And more even so than that, I just am afraid of what Democrats would do with that power. Now, with Trump in office, they're not going to get anything passed, but they would just throw up every roadblock that they can. And in the House, they will do that. The problem is, I feel like the reverse of this should be what happens. The House has actually done a decent job. They haven't done great, but the Republican House has worked pretty hard to do some things and get things done and not just pass bills, but push agendas. And they've done a pretty good job of doing that. They've been fairly bold, not bold enough. I would say that they would get like a B minus just because they haven't addressed the budget enough, but everything else they've done is actually pretty good. The budget is a major, major problem, by the way. If you listen to the show, you'll hear me say that often, regularly, because it has to be addressed at some point. And that point is now. Or it just gets worse and worse. Anyway, the House has done a pretty good job. The Senate has not. The majority of Republican senators are pretty good. Some of them are great. But there are a handful that are not. They are the people that have been there for their entire lives and careers. And they are squishy middle. I mean, you got a couple like Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, who's just awful. Tom Tillis from North Carolina. He'll probably, that the Republicans will probably lose that seat. And it's not because he's awful. It's just because he's retiring and the other guy has more name recognition. It's a swing state. But Republicans should keep at least 51 seats. They only need 50 with the tiebreaker to keep Democrats from basically blocking everything. And the most important part of this is that Trump will be able to continue to appoint judges. And if that's Supreme Court, great. But it's up and down the line. And he'll continue to be able to appoint cabinet members and get them passed, assuming that they don't get blocked by a dumb Murkowski or something like that. Tillis will be gone. Susan Collins might be gone too, but I don't actually dislike. She's squishy middle, but it's because Maine is squishy middle. Lisa Murkowski is just a horrible Republican out of a Republican state, and that's the difference. But all told, I think this is actually pretty decent news for Trump getting his agenda passed. He won't be able to pass any more budget items after Democrats take back the House, assuming they do. But overall, he'll be able to still get most done that he needs to get done, as long as he keeps the Senate. All right, this is Wiggins America. Thank you for being here this week. And I'm glad, you know, that we have some traction with Iran. We addressed that at the beginning. You get the whole podcast by typing in Wiggins America, and we'll see you next week.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best. Let's go! Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.